And as regards the second condition, that is, the establishment of a correct language, this is indispensable because our recently adopted language, which has acquired, as it were, rights of citizenship, and in which we speak, write books, and convey our knowledge and ideas to others, has, in our view, become quite worthless for any more or less exact exchange of opinions. The words that make up our contemporary language, owing to the arbitrary meaning people put into them, convey only indefinite and relative notions and are thus taken by ordinary people elastically. In producing this abnormality in the life of man, a large part was played, in our opinion, by that same abnormal system of education of the rising generation. And it played a large part because by compelling the young, as we have already said, to repeat like parrots the greatest possible number of words, teaching them to differentiate one from another only by their sound, as though the real pith of their meaning had no importance, this system of education has resulted in the gradual loss in people of the capacity to ponder and reflect upon what they are talking about and upon what is being said to them. Having lost this capacity and at the same time needing to convey their thoughts more or less exactly to others, they are obliged, in spite of the endless number of words already existing in each of the contemporary languages, either to borrow from other languages or to invent always more and more words, so that finally, when a contemporary man wishes to express an idea for which he knows many apparently suitable words and chooses one that seems, according to his mental reflection, to be the most fitting, he still instinctively feels uncertain whether his choice is correct and unconsciously gives the word his own subjective meaning. Owing to this already automatized habit and to the gradual disappearance of the capacity to concentrate his active attention for any length of time, the ordinary man, on saying or hearing any word, involuntarily emphasizes and dwells upon one or another aspect of the idea conveyed by the word, invariably limiting the whole meaning of the word to this one aspect. That is to say, this word, instead of including all the implications of the given idea, expresses only the first meaning that happens to come to him, depending upon the automatic associations flowing in him. Hence, every time the contemporary man hears or utters one and the same word in the course of conversation, he gives it a different meaning, often quite contradictory to the full sense conveyed by the word. For any man who is to some extent aware of this and has learned more or less how to observe, the conversation of two contemporary people is a tragicomic feast of sound, which becomes particularly evident when others join it. Each of them puts his own subjective meaning into all the words that have become centers of gravity in that, so to say, symphony of words without content, which to the ear of this impartial and informed observer is simply what is called in the ancient Sinoculupianian tales of the Thousand and One Nights, cacophonous, fantastic nonsense. While conversing in this way, contemporary people imagine that they understand one another and are even certain they are communicating their thoughts to one another. We, on the other hand, relying upon a mass of indisputable data confirmed by psychophysico-chemical experiments, categorically affirm that as long as contemporary people remain what they are, that is, ordinary people, they will never, whatever they may be talking about among themselves, and particularly if the subject is abstract, understand the same ideas from the same words, nor will they ever actually understand one another. That is why, in the ordinary contemporary man, every inner experience, even a painful one, that might oblige him to think and lead him to logical results which could be very beneficial to those around him, remains unexpressed and is only transformed into a, so to say, enslaving factor for himself. For this reason, the isolation of the inner life of each individual is increased, and as a consequence, the mutual instruction so necessary to people's collective existence is disappearing more and more. Owing to the loss of the capacity to ponder and reflect, whenever the average contemporary man hears or uses in conversation any word familiar to him only by its sound, he does not pause to think, nor does he even ask himself exactly what is meant by this word, since he has already decided once and for all that he knows it and that others know it too. Perhaps a question does arise in him when he hears an entirely unfamiliar word for the first time. But in this case, he is content merely to substitute another word with a familiar sound and then to imagine that he has understood it. To bring home what has just been said, an excellent example is provided by a word very often used by every contemporary man, the word world. If people could grasp all that goes on in their thoughts every time they hear or say the word world, most of them would have to admit, if of course they were willing to be sincere, that the word carries no exact notion whatever for them. Simply catching by ear the accustomed sound of this word, the meaning of which they assume they know, they say to themselves, as it were, "Ah, world, I know what that is," and serenely continue on their way. If someone deliberately drew their attention to this word and knew how to get them to say just what they understood by it, they would at first be plainly embarrassed, but quickly pulling themselves together, that is to say, quickly deceiving themselves and recalling the first definition of the word that came to mind, they would present it as their own, although in fact they had not thought about it before. And if one had the authority to oblige a number of contemporary people, even from among those who have received what is called a good education, to state exactly how they each understood the word world, they would all beat about the bush so much that one would involuntarily recall castor oil with a certain tenderness. For instance, one of these people, who among other things had read up a few books on astronomy, would say that the world is a multitude of suns, surrounded by planets at colossal distances from each other, forming together what we call the Milky Way, beyond which, at immeasurable distances and beyond the limits of space accessible to our investigations, are presumably other constellations and other worlds. Another, interested in contemporary physics, would speak of the world as a systematic evolution of matter, beginning with the atom and going up to the very largest aggregates, such as planets and suns. He would perhaps refer to the theory of the similitude of the world of atoms and electrons and the world of suns and planets, and so on in the same strain. Still another, who for some reason or other had made a hobby of philosophy and read all the mishmash on that subject, would say that the world is only the product of our subjective picturings and imaginings, and that our earth, for example, with its mountains and seas, its vegetable and animal kingdoms, is all a world of appearances, an illusory world. A man acquainted with the latest theories of polydimensional space would say that the world is usually considered as an infinite three-dimensional sphere, but that in reality, a three-dimensional world cannot exist as such, and is only an imaginary cross-section of another four-dimensional world from which comes everything proceeding around us and into which everything returns. A man whose worldview is founded on the dogmas of religion would state that the world is everything existing, visible and invisible, created by God and dependent on his will. In the visible world, our life is brief, but in the invisible world, where a man receives reward or punishment for all his deeds during his sojourn in the visible world, life is eternal. One bidden with spiritualism would say that side by side with the visible world, there exists another, a world of the beyond, and that communications have already been established with the beings populating this world of the beyond. A fanatic of theosophy would go still further and say that seven worlds exist, which interpenetrate each other and are composed of more and more rarefied matter, and so on. In short, not a single one of our contemporaries would be able to offer an exact definition, acceptable to all, of the real meaning of the word world.